title, Till the Kneading Had Ceased. Written by Akitania. Read by Lady Peony. Chapter 1, Sax Solo. The Natori house is close enough to the train tracks that Shuichi is sometimes woken in the middle of the night by the rumbling and the engines. He knows the schedules well, and he knows it is only 2 more months until he finishes school and can leave. He knows how he will do it. Every time he is woken by the sound of that mechanical grind, he pictures himself for a moment riding along those tracks, watching the scenery blur by. "You can't go too far," Seiji said, when he'd mentioned it once in passing. He sounded smug in his usual odd way. "You don't know anyone anywhere else." "I'm fine with that." Seiji still had another year of school left, Shuichi remembered. It was why, most likely, he was lurking outside a gathering at a house that belonged to his own family. To go inside was to be treated as a child. Even when he graduated, Seiji wouldn't leave, would he? The thought wasn't a question when it passed his mind. Where else would he go? "Well, it's good you're going into another line of work." That smile again. Shuichi was less tempted to try to wipe it away with a punch than he would have been once, but he still scowled. "I'm not quitting, you know," he said. As if he were the actor, Seiji arched an eyebrow. It was a studied expression. Strange how Seiji was becoming more careful, more mannered. There was something about it that worried Shuichi. The Matoba head grew sicker every day, the rumors said. "Well, if you go far enough, at least you won't have to compete with me." He isn't going that far. He knows the train schedules, but he also knows his limits. It's too soon to leave entirely what little reputation he has built. For the first time, when he hears the rumble on the tracks, when in his mind he watches his home rush away behind him, he does not picture himself alone. "Do you ever want to leave?" he hadn't asked. There wouldn't have been a point. The end. Chapter 2, Your Obedient Servant. His mother was the one who taught him the value of writing a proper letter. She set him to work, scratching out crude practice invitations and inquiries as soon as he could string together hiragana. There are principles to a good letter. It must be concise. It must be personal, and it must be clear. The letter he sent to the Natsume boy was not a particularly good one. It rambled. It betrayed uncertainty. But then, he never really expected it to be read. Typically, if he isn't satisfied with what he's written, he won't send it at all. One letter lies discarded in the back of a desk drawer, where it has lain for years. It begins, "Dear Shuichi-san," and ends, "I wish you would," because he never thought of a proper resolution. Tonight, it is too late. The shadows in his room a bit too sharp and dark. So he has made several errors already. Let ink smear and characters tilt off-center. He doesn't mind, because this letter isn't going to be read either. It begins, "Dear Notori-san," and ends, "I know how you," because he is giving up on writing anymore. His mother always chid him for leaving things unfinished, though, so he adds the word "interfered," so at least the sentence is complete. "I wish you would." He remembers the letter, but not how he had meant to conclude it. It had to have been something too selfish for him to entertain now. The end. Chapter 3, Canon Divergence AU Time. At the very least, they look good. Notori had thought once that he might become an actor. He knows how to catch people's attention. He does it with intent now, after years of not having much choice in the matter. A grand old hall in a grand old villa isn't so much different from a stage, and he can reduce it to set pieces in his mind. Cast the gathered crowd as the chorus, and Matoba, whose ability to draw the eye, like every other ability, is just a bit superior, and himself slightly behind, as his support. They look very good. Balanced in color, almost matched in height, Notori's sharp worldliness met by Matoba's vague other worldliness. An obvious partnership. He knows what the others see when they look at them. He becomes less a grasping upstart, Matoba less an icy, unreal prodigy. The shining hopes of their generation. That's casting, too. They are tremendously helpful to each other in their ways. "Talk to Fukuyama-san," Matoba murmurs as they enter. He can speak almost without moving his lips. "He won't say anything useful to me." "Who will?" Notori tosses back. "He can't speak and keep a steady face, but he can grin through any words." Matoba's smile in response is very thin. He looks back at Notori, the way he looks at his bow before he draws it. "You, maybe." The end. Chapter 4, Skinship? "Get down," Shuichi hissed, and before Seiji could protest, "No, this is my chance," the older boy had half-dragged him to the ground to hide with him behind a leafless bush. "This doesn't even provide any cover," Seiji wanted to complain. He wanted to complain, too, about the frost soaking through his clothes and a smell of rotting leaves. But Shuichi was so absorbed in tracking the motions of the yokai between the trees that Seiji had a feeling he would be even less attentive than usual. Behind those useless glasses, his eyes were flicking back and forth, following the shadowy form. So distracted was he that he hadn't moved his hand from Seji's wrist, a fact he inexplicably found more irritating than his wet knees or the wasted opportunity when the yokai was right there in front of them. "You're not going to catch anything by sitting on the ground," Seji whispered instructionally. "That's today's lesson. Don't just sit there." The yokai, a beast, wolf-like in shape, was drawing closer, and Seji could trace the arc of a perfect, clear shot to reach it. Just as he started to pull back, ready to draw an arrow, Shuichi's fingers tightened around his wrists as if by reflex. "Let go!" "What?" Shuichi muttered, glancing back at Seji for the first time. "Oh." He released him so casually, he might not have noticed he'd been touching him at all. Just as the way the cold of the frozen ground seemed to have seeped through his clothes, the heat of Shuichi's hand seemed to have done the same. As Seji readied his bow, he tried to ignore the way the skin on his wrist prickled, as though it had been burned. The end. Chapter 5, Fetch the Smelling Salts. Above him, Seji was saying something, but the words didn't reach. Shuichi thought of television static, or a poorly tuned radio, or words half erased on a chalkboard, his mind drifting. His body, which had felt so heavy a moment ago, had become suddenly light, and he wasn't entirely sure he was still lying on the ground where he collapsed. "Home." He heard the word and his own name, and sudden, rough contact. Seji was pulling at him, but Shuichi's feet couldn't find solid ground. He wasn't sure what way he needed to move. Another word. "Please." For some reason, the one thought capable of sticking in his mind instead of running through like water was that this was the only time he could remember Seji being even vaguely polite. To him, at least. He meant to laugh, but it came out as a shudder and a gasp, which earned another, "Shuichi-san." Was he concerned? Shuichi forced his eyes open again, but the swimming fractal of leaves above him just nauseated him. He let them fall shut, and this time, the rest of the world faded away as well. Shuichi didn't regain consciousness until he was back in his house, staring at Seji's back, silhouetted against the dusky light. So he wasn't sure why he thought he remembered the sunset burning behind his eyelids, or Seji's bony shoulder digging into his chest. He wasn't sure, either, why the light and the nearly obscured shape of Seji's body brought him back to an older memory, a half-awake fragment that had felt more like a dream, if he ever had dreamed so mundane. Just himself, waking on a windowsill, and Seji beside him, weaving as he woke. But why would he be? Well, why would he have dreamed it? The end. Chapter 6. Look at this photograph. Does it show up in pictures? Shuichi would have cursed if he weren't surrounded by exorcists, who already seemed to have decided he was some kind of hooligan. Instead, he turned around with great patience and gave Seji, of course, even if he hadn't recognized the voice, who else conjured himself from thin air to bother him at gatherings. A very baleful look. What? In one hand, Seji was holding a cup of tea. In the other, he gestured vaguely at Shuichi's forearm. The salamander Ayakashi, he realized, looking down. It had circled his wrist and was wriggling under his sleeve, only the tip of the tail still visible. I was wondering about your pet. Why? Asked Shuichi, not in the mood for questions longer than one word. Seji looked irritated himself, a scowl passing over his face for just a moment before transmuting to his usual smile. Curiosity? But does it? Have you ever seen it in a photograph? It took him a moment to consider it. He could hardly remember being photographed, much less looking at pictures of himself. His family wasn't exactly the scrapbooking type. He had never bothered to buy his school's yearbook either, but had always just waited for the Ayakashi to move from his face before smiling for the camera. He wasn't sure why, though. None of his classmates would be able to see it in the first place. I don't know. I don't think so. Shuichi recognized boredom in Seji's bland expression as he took a sip of tea, and in boredom recognized something. It always seemed to take Seji a lot of effort to appear expressionless. Do you want to find out? He asked. One of my cousins gave me a camera for my last birthday. He squinted. Again. Why? And again. Curiosity. His voice had turned strangely defensive, and he took a very long drink of his tea before saying again, I said, curiosity. The end. Chapter 7, I Got Sunshine. Shuichi is an indifferent student, not a bad one. He wouldn't skip school without cause, and being accosted on his morning route by Motoba Seji, bow slung across his back, and smile, bright, is not much of a cause. A yokai in the valley behind the train tracks is not much of a cause. Being bullied into accompanying Seji on a hunt is not much of a cause, but for some reason, it works. I still can't believe it's practically in your backyard and you didn't notice, Seji says, plucking the string of his bow as they approach the second hour of lying in wait. Shut up, Shuichi mutters, but his heart isn't in it. He hasn't been sleeping well, and the mid-morning heat is soporific, all the dew now faded from the grass. He unrolls from his hunched sitting position to lying flat on his back, not minding the way the grass tickles his neck, or soon will be staining his shirt now that his blazer's been discarded. Seji looks at him and actually sounds disappointed when he says, You're not taking this seriously. Barely listening, Shuichi searches the sky. There's an airplane. A few birds. You're just here to cut class. Suddenly, Seji flops down as well, his neck twisted so he can continue scrutinizing Seji. He feels embarrassed for some reason, and it certainly isn't Seji's critical expression. I'd cut class in my own home if I wanted to. This is out of my way. I'm here to work. Shuichi doesn't so much laugh as take a few staccato breaths, refusing to smile. Obviously. He doesn't want to actually fall asleep, even now that Seji's become quiet, so he keeps his eyes trained on the clouds. One shaped like a tiger, one like a baseball cap. He feels like a child. After the silence has stretched just a bit too far, Shuichi becomes uncomfortably aware that Seji hasn't moved. It's still craning his neck to look at him. He cranes his, too, to meet Seji's eyes for just a moment. They are strangely distant, almost dreamy, and something rolls over in Shuichi's stomach. "Why are you looking at me like that?" he asks, unsure why his voice sounds so sharp. Seji opens his mouth, but he doesn't have an answer. The end. Chapter 8, Balcony Scene Redux. It's the sense of deja vu that makes him stop. Shuichi hears his name, or at least his family's, but doesn't pause until he feels the faintly electric familiarity roll down his spine, and then he turns. He would know where to look, even without knowing how the voices carried down from the second-story window. He remembers Seji curled in the frame, wide eyes on him like a bored house cat. He remembers how he'd scowl back at him, thinking of the stubborn red of the kimono pierced by the tree. He's so-so. Matoba is not looking down tonight, but Shuichi can recognize him in the window, hair gathered in a thin tail at his nape. His shoulders, draped in his formal black, are broad enough now to block more of the warm light and to make it harder for Shuichi to see past him. The voice Shuichi had heard mention Natori was not his, too high, nor was the warmer one that responds, "I heard he barely made it out alive." "That's a stretch," he thinks, with some indignation, even if he can still feel the bruises on his ribs. He wouldn't have taken the job if it could have killed him. Though, he reflects, that isn't something he should mention. Some exorcists take pride in their redundancy, the ease with which they can be replaced in case of a noble death. Not Matoba, Shuichi thinks. Not Matoba Seji, whose family tree is overcrowded with cousins, but seems reluctant to take a bride. Shuichi doesn't only eavesdrop on gossip about himself. Matoba may have replacements, but it is difficult to picture him taking satisfaction in an heir who was not, at the very least, hand-picked. It is Matoba who adds, in a lighter voice than Shuichi is used to hearing, "I wouldn't count him out so easily." If someone else left the villa now and came across Shuichi, still on the pathway out, it would be obvious that he was listening in to the conversation above, but he can't bring himself to move on. Nor can he stop himself from nearly smiling, a ridiculous impulse. "It's a nice night," he tells himself, "crisp for so early in autumn." If he looks away from the window, he will just be enjoying the air. "Tell me, Matoba-sama," someone says, "you knew him rather well when he was first starting out, didn't you? Did you think he showed much promise then?" Shuichi could laugh, and he could also provide an answer without needing a moment to think. Of course not. as if every half-hearted collaboration from those days hadn't blurred together into a stream of criticism and mean-spirited teasing. He had no idea what he was doing, Matoba says, true to form. But his voice hits an odd tone. He's remarkably clever, though, and he had the resources he needed. A shame about his house, or he might actually be a threat. It's a shame I'm not, Shuichi thinks. And the same exorcist who had asked the question before remarks slightly, I would think you would be happy about that. The airy conversation reminds Shuichi almost unbearably of rap parties and premiere celebrations, the imitation warmth that really ought to be easier for people in his profession. But something in the way Matoba responds cuts through it. Well, there are many ways things could have been different. How dramatic. It isn't the first time Shuichi thinks Matoba should have been the one to go into acting. He's heard enough, though, and takes his leave without looking back. The conversation unsettles him in a way he'd prefer to ignore, settling somewhere in his chest amongst the bruises. Even on such a clear night, sound doesn't travel so well from so far, and it is easy for Shuichi to believe he has misread what sounded at first to be a wistful tone. The end.